Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next, a dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Welcome to another episode of What's Next. I'm host Thomas O'Neill White, and today we are talking about transportation inequality. Joining me today from Go Bike Buffalo are its Executive Director Justin Booth, Go Bike Communications Director Kevin Heffernan, and Jamal Davis, a transit rider organizer for the Coalition for Economic Justice. Thank you all for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
So we're going to go one way, but we're going to start with some expressions of joy and a vision for the future for this city and region. Kevin, you want to start us off with that?
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of joy, I think we're really happy to celebrate that since 2020, we've seen a major growth in the amount of people who are cycling, who are getting out there and walking, the amount of people who are trying transit.
That's right.
And you know, I think the vision that we've got for the future at Go Bike, I think it aligns with CEJ, and you can chime in, Jamal, but you know, when you think about the future of the way we move around our city and region, whether it's gas cars, electric cars, automated cars, all the problems we're experiencing right now in terms of road safety, congestion, even pollution, it's all the same. But when you think outside the box on how things could really look, it's very frequent and very close in proximity transit that's available to everybody,
right.
Very affordable.
That's right.
And then walking and biking takes up that last few blocks to get you where you've got to go to your destination. And that is a future that connects our city once again, doesn't divide it into those who have cars and those who don't. It's a future that has a lot more people healthier just because of the way they're moving around and also the air they're able to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one where economic opportunity is more widely available. It's a more egalitarian society where everybody's got access to those job opportunities, also to medical services, to recreation, whether you have a car or not.
Yeah, I'm jumping off what he said. The joy is really how, because as a transit rider organizer, I work a lot in advocacy to see many of our community partners come together and work together on a shared vision or a shared future. That's where the really joy comes for me. Now, the hope for the future or the vision in which Kevin so very, very, very wellly articulated is accessibility for all. Mm-hmm. The thing is, we have to think about, you know, with our visions, how is it sustainable? So how do we reach a person or a group of people or individuals who may not have the ability to get there for themselves? How do we help them? Because I'm sure we can develop a system around that. And we have come together as community organizations to have these conversations, to develop tangible solutions in what ways we can advocate for them. And then we want to win. So we want to make sure that these things are implemented within a reasonable time frame. We don't want to be waiting for forever, but we want to make sure that it does happen.
And I'll just add, it's both a privilege and a joy that I've been able to ride my bicycle with my daughters to school every day. Mm-hmm. And it's quality time that I've been able to have with them that, you know, I would like to see everyone have that opportunity to do so.
And so there are some lingering issues, and some of the subtopics we are going to touch on with regard to transportation inequality. Well, first one would be safety. According to NBC News, over 7,000 pedestrian fatalities in 2022, the most since 1981. Off the top, though, I know in our you know, pre-episode talk, we talked about accidents, but Justin, you would not call them accidents, and why?
No, we call them crashes, because an accident says that, you know, that this was something that could not be prevented. But we know that there are a number of strategies that we can put in place in our communities, that all these deaths that are happening on our roadways are preventable. And there's ways that we can address them as a community, whether it's through redesigning our streets, whether it's through better education, whether it's through holding people accountable, you know, for driving recklessly. You know, so there's a lot we can do, and why we want to make sure that these are not accidents and tragic accidents, but preventable deaths.
And is there the argument that we really can't rely on drivers to become better behaved? We need more street calming measures put forth in local government?
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen it over and over again, no matter which community we worked with, whether it's here in the city of Buffalo, across the city of Buffalo, or in Niagara County, down in Chautauqua or Cattaraugus County. You know, just putting a speed limit up or posting a stop sign at a four-way stop doesn't get all drivers to obey the speed limit. Doesn't get all drivers to stop at those stop signs. We do know that there's a number of design strategies. Design influences behavior. And so we can do things on our streets that make it safer for pedestrians simply by adding bump outs at intersections, so there's better sight lines, both for drivers to be able to see oncoming vehicles, but also for pedestrians to see if it's safe for them to actually cross, particularly if they're children. You know, there's simple things like speed humps that we're seeing, you know, installed throughout the city of Buffalo.
Right.
You know, there are protected bike lanes and narrow travel lanes, which we know effectively reduces the speed, because a car going 40 miles an hour, if you're struck as a pedestrian, you have about a 10% chance of survival. But at 20 miles an hour, you have a 90% chance of survival. And so speed matters. And so there's a lot of very simple mechanisms and measures that we can put in place to design our community in a way that is going to build equity in a transportation system, as well as, you know, reduce the number of crashes we're seeing on our roadways.
Yeah, local municipalities in the past, if they wanted to lower their speed limit, they had to petition to the state and have the state really involved in order to just get it down from 30 to 25. And in 2022, the state made it legal for any municipality, town, village, city, to lower their speed limit to 25 miles an hour wherever they'd like. So changing the sign doesn't necessarily change someone's behavior right away, right? But decent drivers will abide by that.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes time for that road to be rebuilt or redesigned, now it can be designed at 25 miles an hour. And that's where you start getting those narrower roads where people automatically feel like, whoa, this is kind of tight. I'm going to put my phone down. I'm going to slow down and I'm going to pay attention. People do that inherently. They don't wake up that day saying, I'm going to be a better driver today. They do it when the environment around them sort of forces them to.
And when it comes to like safety as an overall for pedestrian standpoint, we would have to come to understanding like who enforces, like when people aren't in alignment, what needs to be done. Here in Buffalo, we know one thing that's going to happen. It's going to snow. It's going to come.
Right.
We know that's just going to be. So who's responsible for sidewalk snow removal of bus stops is something that it's a conversation that we've had with City Hall, with the administration, with, you know, different municipalities, because they tell us that it's on the responsibility on the homeowner or the property owner, which is the truth, which we understand, but no one's enforcing them. So if we want people to catch the bus, we want to make sure that they feel safe, that they can catch the bus.
Now, tell me if I'm wrong, but other cities like Rochester and Syracuse have adopted like more of a municipal snow cleanup.
Yeah.
And that has worked wonders.
Yeah, when it's, I believe it's 4 inches or more, the municipality will step in. So Syracuse did it based on a school zone approach. So they started looking at who could walk to school if we cleared these sidewalks. And every year they extend that, and now they've pretty much got their entire city connected through these school zone walking paths. Whereas Rochester is doing it on a bus line sort of approach where, okay, how far can we clear from each bus stop that people can walk from their neighborhoods to this stop clearly? And again, they keep expanding. And in Buffalo, there's been plenty of calls for it. And certainly right after it snows and you see people standing up on a big mound trying to get on the bus, or far more dangerously, having to walk in the street with traffic on slick roads because the sidewalks aren't cleared. We call for it all over again and all over again. We go on the news, say we need this. Rochester and Syracuse have pulled it off. And again, like, it seems like the economic argument is one that can win the day. Do we want all our businesses to see their workers late for work or unable to get there because we couldn't clear these sidewalks for them, and see our city crippled by another snowstorm and that economic downturn? Or do we want to say, this is Buffalo, we wear snow as a badge on our chest, we're so proud of how we handle it. Obviously, a snowstorm doesn't matter. Everybody got to work on time because we know how to handle it. Mm-hmm. So are we that city that can handle snow, or aren't we?
Good question.
So, yeah, as you mentioned, in the city of Buffalo, we've seen more traffic circles instead of stop signs, bike lanes, street humps. Not everywhere, but in some neighborhoods. Are other towns incorporating these small but effective street calming measures?
Yeah, we've done a lot of work in small towns and villages across Western New York. You know, the village of Hamburg is certainly one that we highlight for a rural community, you know, that was, you know, really driven by the residents in the village and the town. You know, it was, you know, Route 62, state roadway. It was four lanes, heavy truck traffic. And the community said, we want something better, you know. And so in turn, you saw, instead of traffic signals, you see roundabouts, you see bike lanes, you see mid-block crossings, you see street trees. And I think there's been, you know, some really good comparison data of what was there and what's not there. They saw crashes drop of upwards of 66% through the street redesign. So we know that putting these effective measures in place makes our roadway safer. Unfortunately, it's not the default in which we design our roads to.
Talk a little bit about that outreach to the members and residents in Hamburg, because, I mean, you live in the city?
I do live in the city.
So talk about GoBike's outreach to those communities. Are you going out there and saying, oh, well, you know, this could be better? Or are people coming to you and saying, we're having this issue? Can you help us?
Yeah, so the work that we do is really, you know, where communities are coming to us and asking for our support and assistance, you know, oftentimes working with municipal leaders. You know, the town of Hamburg supervisor, Randy Hoke, has been working with us. We have helped them develop an active mobility plan for the entire town of Hamburg with a really strong focus in Blaisdell, particularly around Lake Avenue, where our Mother Good Counsel Senior Center is. They've had three of their residents die trying to cross the street simply to go to the grocery store. And so, you know, the calls to how do we redesign the roadway to make it safe for people to simply cross the street that are elderly or mobility impaired. And so our work is less about going to the community and saying, look what we can do for you, but is going to the residents to find out what are their lived experiences, how are, you know, the roadways in their community affecting them, what would they like to see done or changed to do it. And then we come up with a number of different viable options that they can then select. And we, you know, instead of showing them a picture of what that actually can look like, what we like to do is work with them to do temporary projects, you know, whether it's temporary for a weekend, for a season, for a couple of years, you know, but there is a lot that can be done to share once you've gone out there and, you know, can touch and experience what a protected bike lane is, you know, how a protected intersection could work, you know, how narrowing the roadways make it safer for pedestrians and cyclists, and collecting the data to show what has happened before and what has happened after. And so when the final capital project and the resources are available for that capital project are available, you know, the municipality can make a more informed decision, because we've seen in some of our projects where, hey, vehicles are having a hard time making a right-hand turn. Well, it's very simple. Improvement on that, we pull the stop bar back so vehicles can make that turn on that tighter turning radii. The tighter turning radii was there so to reduce crossing distances for pedestrians and to slow cars down. And so is it more difficult for cars to make that turn? Sometimes yes, but by simply making some small changes in that design, we can still facilitate movement of vehicles while also making it, you know, accessible for all other modes. And then making sure that we are, you know, using our public resources effectively and efficiently by having a design vetted by the community, engaged by the community, demonstrates that it actually can work, and also making those safety improvements happen tomorrow, as opposed to many of these projects, particularly, you know, projects that involve federal or state dollars, it could be 10 years before a shovel is actually in the ground, you know? And so people want their communities to be safe now. And there's a lot of ways we've changed our process to work in communities that can help make that happen.
And for CEJ-SIG, I have the pleasure of being the transit rider organizer. So I just get on the bus, get on the train, and I just go talk to people. Uh-huh. And I do, there are many times where you see me with the clipboard and the CEJ shirt, and to where it's more of like, oh, okay, I'm just here to get your input, invite you to our meeting, kind of have that outreach perspective. But there are many days, because I'm an avid bus user, I just have conversations with individuals on the bus. Hey, what do you think about this bus? Or what do you think about this? What do you think about the time of this bus? Just to get an accurate depiction of what's happening on the ground. One of the things that I'm appreciative of GoBike and other community partners, that we all seem to strive to find accurate depiction of what's actually happening to validate the statistics that we have. Because it's not about, oh yes, because we can come and we can fill your head with a whole bunch of statistics and give you all the things that sound good. But no, we want to talk about the commute that happened this morning. We want to find out how you feel about, you know, how you got home from work, where you have to go and stop and pick up your kids from daycare, stop and get dinner, and then make it home to get them safely home so you can get prepared for the next day. How is that being impacted currently? And that comes with a lot of our community engagement and outreach.
So what are they telling you? What are you seeing? What are the transit riders telling you?
Oh man! Oh, I hear it's a range. It's some really people enjoy it because I want to give a huge shout out to the NFTA drivers. They are they're doing the best that they can, and what they do is they make an attempt to make sure they're communicating with each one of their passengers. So some have formed relationships with some of their passengers. Thinking of drivers who drive paratransit specifically for our disabled people, but I'm also hearing individuals just concerned about safety. Like, you know, our train stations out here are open, so where people could just walk up. And unfortunately, Buffalo does deal with an unhoused community downtown where individuals may approach someone, and, you know, and riders are a little leery about that. But finding ways to where we can, you know, tackle that solution is kind of the joy of the job. You know, how can we make sure that you feel safe riding to bus to increase transit or increase ridership, to make sure that we are fulfilling the qualifications for the funding that's out there.
Kevin, you have anything to add?
I would just lean in on that frustration over these projects, especially some that have full funding, taking 5 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. You know, we were approached by a lot of families who are concerned about safety on their street for their kids, and they're just waiting for these changes to come down the line and give their kids a safe place to walk or bike away from cars, when we're talking about trails and greenways and things like that, or to get the design measures put into their own block to slow down those cars. In the meantime, you know, our entire nation is talking about this mental health crisis for children today. And when we tell them it's not safe to be in the street, you know, I think every adult who's listening to this program right now grew up on a street that was safer than children have today.
Absolutely.
Yep. This has been a particularly violent summer, with hit and runs that have left children on the side of the road, mm-hmm. with hits that have killed children, and we are still not seeing urgency and action. And we just say, well, we can make streets as safe as we can within reason. Well, where do you draw the line? Do you want to protect your community's children and let them play, mm-hmm. and let them grow into healthy individuals into adulthood? Or do you want that truck to be able to move down that street at a faster speed just to save them a few seconds? You know, we've really normalized prioritizing car convenience and car speed, and it has a cost that we are now seeing amongst our children in our community and across the country.
Kev, I appreciate you calling that violence. You know, as an individual, I didn't think about it from that perspective, and you helped me reframe, because it is violence. It really is. So we want to make sure that we are not just talking about, you know, what solutions can be done, but we can hold those accountable for who can make these solutions happen.
Can I just add, I think, you know, one of the challenges that we've had is just the regulatory process to allow some of these projects to happen more quickly. And at a federal level, a lot has changed. So the MUTCD, or the Manual for Uniform Traffic Control Devices, which dictates everything from what color stop signs are to the signs on our expressways and everything else being green and white. For the first time ever, that has changed to allow these temporary quick build projects to be implemented using paint and bollards as a way to try out these things, where that has not been in place before. The city of Buffalo deserves a lot of credit for being willing to work with us to deliver these projects in communities. You know, they have really helped. We've blazed a path with them and a process with them to develop that with their public works department. You know, but we're still meeting resistance, even with some of these federal processes changing from, you know, counties and the state. So there's still a lot of growth that could be done. Even when some of these regulatory processes have changed, there's still buy-in that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. I need you guys to bust a myth for me that bike lanes and narrow streets slow down emergency vehicles. What do you say to that?
Why don't we start with a number that Kevin pulled earlier, that across from 2018 to 2023, there were over 43,000 crashes alone in the city of Buffalo. Car to car, car to property, car to bicycle and pedestrian. Those are 43,000 times where a emergency vehicle, whether police, fire or ambulance, needed to go to a location to address a traffic crash on our streets. That's a significant cost to the city of Buffalo, and we can certainly bring those costs down and make our streets safer, you know, and reduce that burden that we have in our city for those emergency vehicles.
Yeah, and then the next thing is just the data shows that that's been disproven. You know, it's an honest apprehension that a lot of people have. You know, you make this road so narrow, where a car is going to get out of the way to let this vehicle pass, or if you put speed humps on my street, a fire truck's not going to be able to get down there. But in truth, they can. Down to the size of the wheel wells on a fire truck can just go right over that speed hump. And the other, you know, items here are when you make it easier and safer to walk, to bike, make it more accessible to ride transit, you are removing cars from the road, which makes things even more efficient when an ambulance needs to get through. We've seen these arguments come out of New York City for congestion pricing, that you will get more cars off the road, and these emergency vehicles that are stuck in traffic that New York has, that Buffalo really has never experienced in terms of traffic, that you would ease up that traffic and get these emergency vehicles right through. So we really need to think about that in a different way. Every time you see a cyclist or a person walking, that's one less car on the road. Every time you see a bus full of people, that's 50 less cars on the road. So within the efforts of the three of us here, we are trying to make it easier for that ambulance or that fire truck to get where it's going to attend to an emergency that hopefully is less and less a car crash.
And so what we've seen over the past few years with bus lines in the city getting cut or combined is not very helpful in that regard of
not at all.
less cars on the street.
Not at all. And with bus drivers, that stuff is about finding creative solutions. We hear there is a driver shortage across the nation. That is something that every person is familiar with coming out of COVID. But, you know, the United States has shown the strongest recovery coming out of COVID. It's been 4 years later. So we're looking to find creative solutions to, you know, impact that driver shortage to get buses back on the road. One of them being oral fluid testing,
yes,
which determines whether a person is under the influence of marijuana specifically within a 48 to a 72 hour time frame. Now, with that being said, we, in the reality, none of us want someone under the influence of anything driving our bus.
Of course.
Right? But we live in a state where marijuana is legal for recreational use, so that it's not something that can be held against an individual when applying for work. This rule change happened with the FTA, so it's not necessarily a statewide legislation. This is the Federal Transit Authority, the one who oversees and enforces the policies that transit authorities here adhere to. So with this change in testing availability, what this could do is this could help hire more drivers, get more buses on the road, so we can have more people out of cars, hopefully taking public transportation, so we can, you know, make the seats straight for the streets safer for everyone.
Hey people, Corey here with Compact Civics. If you're from Western New York, you know snow. And unfortunately, you know how damaging those annoying potholes can be.
But do you know what's involved in filling those potholes so your car tires can stay intact? Let me put you on. Because maintaining roads involves way more than the average citizen might think. Cities, counties, and states take part in this process. Why, you might ask? Well, a state might be responsible for filling potholes and paving, but a city handles snow plowing and de-icing. These responsibilities are shared among elected officials, road managers, supervisors, and other essential personnel, all so you can drive safely. Try and imagine a city or town without a public works department. No one to manage public buildings like schools or hospitals, or maintain infrastructure we rely on, like roads, bridges, and airports. Can't forget about essential public services like water and sewage. And when those summer months hit, you can forget about public spaces we enjoy, like parks and beaches. We deserve these spaces, and our taxes pay for it all. So, next time you drive across a smooth road or see a snowplow clearing one, appreciate it. Public works are the backbone of what keep our communities and quality of life thriving.
Special thanks to our partners, the Buffalo Presidential Center, whose mission is to explore and share stories about Buffalo and Western New York's contributions to the U.S. presidency and national affairs.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And so, Jamal.
Yes.
Let's talk about Coalition for Economic Justice. Talk about the Transit Ambassador Program.
Yes, thank you. The Transit Ambassador Program is a program that CEJ's developed out of our Clean Mobility Project. What we're going to do is we're going to train individuals from that community and inform them on how the public transportation system works so they can, and through a stipend based to us, they can be advocates in the community for individuals who may not know how to catch the bus. So what that's going to do is we're going to have a training program. The NLG is a another program housed out of one of our community partners. They have a group of community members that gather together to work on transportation issues. We're going to use that group as a pilot group to train them on how the transportation system works, and then we're going to place them at different spots within along the transportation system, thinking about train stations, thinking about the bus, Greyhound bus station, to where they will be an available resource for individual taking the transportation system and how they can help. Now, we've had a huge influx of migrants in our community, many of them that don't know how to catch the bus. We're going to have someone there that's going to help them learn how to catch the bus. NFTA has a transit ambassador program that has made themselves available to help people catching the bus. How to catch the bus? How do you purchase your ticket? How good is a ticket? How long is a single pass ticket good for? How long is a day pass good for? How long is a monthly pass good for? How does the bus routes connect? These individuals will be trained and available to help the community and encourage them that this transportation system is and the use of it is better for all of us and not just the ones who catch the bus.
How do you decide where these people are going to be stationed?
We're going to impact the entire transportation system. What we did, we developed a model where we're going to work from outwardly in for a month, and then we're going to work inwardly outwardly. So basically, if we think of just for a simple demonstration, the train station, which is a one, starts at University Station, ends at Erie Canal Station. We're going to have two people at each station each day. So we're going to start at University Station, Erie Canal, and then we're going to go to LaSalle and Seneca, and then we're going to go to Church and Amherst, and then we're going to go to Humboldt, and then we're just going to have individuals at each station, just to be available at different times of the day, and hopefully really work on some of those safety issues and making people feel safe that it's okay to ride the bus.
And we discussed this pre-show that, the issue with cutting bus lines has economic impact, negative impact, with people who city residents who need to find work in the suburbs.
Yes, this was a 2022 study that 72% of the jobs in Western New York are out outside of the city limits. So with that being said, residents from the city, whether it be East Buffalo, the West Side, whether it be North Buffalo, whether it be South Buffalo, they have to get a sustainable wage to sustain themselves. And many of them don't have vehicles, personal vehicles for them to drive. So having many of the jobs for sustainable wage outside of the city limits, they're forced to catch the public transportation system. Well, now if we're cutting buses that, you know, leave from these areas because ridership may be low throughout the day because many people who live out there, they can afford to have cars because that's, you know, how that it's developed out there. But someone who gets off work at 11 o'clock in the evening in the town of Lancaster or the town of Depew or any of those, you know, suburban areas, it is very difficult to catch a bus back. Or if vice versa, there are individuals who work at bakeries that are out there that start at 5 and 6 o'clock in the morning to where they got to get up and, you know, find ways to get there and, you know, so they can be, you know, at work and on time and prepared and just to sustain themselves. So they're not looking for entertainment. They're not looking to, you know, negatively affect the community. They're just looking to find work to where they can provide a sustainable life for them and their families.
And I also want to make note, and we talked about this earlier too, is, you know, the inextricable link between transportation and land use decisions. You know, 72% of all the jobs being out in the suburbs, you know, we know from AAA that it costs over $10,000 a year to own and operate a vehicle. Right. And so how are we, you know, supporting people by locating all these jobs out where they can't access them? The NFTA does not have any decision-making power over where these new jobs are going, you know, but they're asked to use the limited resources that they have to provide more services to these locations. You know, so how do we change our land use decisions to make sure that public transit is a better viable option for more people in our community and make those investments more appropriately?
And right now in my neighborhood today, I would have to catch two buses to go buy a roll of toilet tissue.
And that would take you how long?
That would take me at least an hour and 15 minutes.
Wow.
I live in East Buffalo. I live on Stevens Avenue off of Delavan Avenue. There's no Family Dollar. There's no Dollar General. It would take me two buses to get to somewhere to buy a roll of toilet tissue.
And what we see around your neighborhood, Delavan's a street that we've been really active in, there is a disproportionate number of crashes in our East Buffalo neighborhoods. So to say, like, well, why don't you skip the bus? You would expect go bike, right? To be like, well, why don't you skip the bus? Walk, bike, go that way. But then we're encouraging you to get out on a dangerous streets, where you have a higher likelihood than other places in the city of being hit, whether you're walking across an intersection or riding along the shoulder. So these are the kind of things that we're working on together, our organizations through Clean Mobility Buffalo, which you know, focuses heavily on the neighborhoods that make up the East Side or East Buffalo. And, you know, it's talking about making roads safer for walking and biking, making transit more accessible, down to bike share and tons of other things to literally clean mobility, to clean up the air, to make it easier to move around in sustainable ways throughout these neighborhoods. And I think what's important to mention about this, you know, when you talk about programs that are for East Buffalo residents, we're not talking about, you know, let's lift these folks up to get them back on the same plane as the rest of us. Mm-hmm. I think Clean Mobility Buffalo is working in the East Side to lead. This is the first time a neighborhood in Buffalo or Western New York is thinking this deeply and doing the kind of programming it's doing to see its residents move around differently. Should this be successful, which we really think this coalition, you know, which includes CEJ, Open Buffalo, Go Bike, East Side Bike Club,
Ready Bike Share,
Bike Share, Heart of City Neighborhoods. There are so many groups in it. I think it will be successful. And then you will see these East Buffalo neighborhoods be a model that the rest of the city would then follow rather than say, oh, good for them, they caught up. You know,
the city of Buffalo's flag says the word resilience on it. So it is a reminder that we are resilient in the sense of how this clean mobility project comes together. And now it gives us a chance to tangibly display it because, you know, it's really easy to have, you know, these conversations. We have meetings and I love meeting with Justin. I love, you know, being in the room with that guy. He inspires me to do great things. So And even though I enjoy that so much, I like to go out into community and tangibly say, like, no, this is what we're doing. This isn't just what we're talking about. This is what we're doing when we're on the. So to be able to work in conjunctions with individuals from different organizations, hey, buses have bike racks on them. I think of the resilience of members of my campaign. One of the people who come to mind is a gentleman by the name of Simon, who works for one of the organizations, a part of the Clean Mobility. He's a member of our campaign. He bikes and he rides transportation. And, you know, when we think about individuals who have that experience, it is very important that we, you know, utilize, you know, that experience to how we develop it and change it and grow it into something that's accessible and better for all of us and not just, you know, certain parts of town or anything like that.
I think one, you know, just to, I think, help the public listening understand, like, clean mobility, like, what does that actually mean? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think a major focus of this whole effort has been to take greenhouse gas emissions out of the transportation sector.
Right. Right.
Our personal transportation choices and habits are the number one source of greenhouse gas emissions. Transportation in Erie County, in Western New York, in New York State, in the entire country is being driven literally by people choosing to drive by themselves on a regular basis. And we know through national data that majority of trips that Americans take are within 1 to 3 miles. And the majority of those trips are taken in a car by ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so how do we make our environment safe enough so that you can easily take that quick walk to the grocery store or to the park or whatever you need without having to hop in a car. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is community building. And it's not easy. And we've done a lot of disservice to ourselves and to our communities for many generations. And this is really taking a harder look at how do we do a better job of creating access and connect people back to the basic services in their communities so we can walk with our families and walk with our kids or bike with our kids to school again.
And just speaking about environmental and health impacts, well, what are the health effects of what an automobile-centric city has on its residents?
Well, we've got some of the highest rates of heart disease and asthma in the entire state in the neighborhoods that are adjacent to the Humboldt Expressway. And, you know, we've built a region that relies on cars driving in and out of a city to its downtown core. And with the Humboldt Expressway, we're telling folks that you can just speed right through a neighborhood and pollute it. And, you know, we're considering doubling down on that expressway. I don't know if you want to talk more about that.
About the expressway?
And yeah.
Yes. Well, specifically CEJ, we've got a chance to sign on with the Coalition of Youth Climate Act Council and CRT, who we're familiar with, to sue the Department of Transportation and to stop this project. Now, the goal is to talk about, in 2019, New York State passed a climate law that gives a set of guidelines that each transportation project across the state has to fulfill a certain guideline on how much the emissions would be and what that would look like. Now, if I got into the numbers, it would get really long and boring. What we've shown and what they've shown based off the project that has been proposed, it does not fit the guidelines. So how can we push this project through, not considering the community, when it does not, you know, fit the law of the land that has already been established? That is not something that we feel is good. That is not something that we feel is safe. That is not something we feel is equitable. So we're standing up against it and opposed it to make sure that this stuff is heard, this stuff is changed, because even if we change the parameters to fit the law, we can have conversations on what a project could look like as long as it fits the parameters of our climate law.
I think when you're talking about the state's efforts to create climate goals and the various ways they want to meet those climate goals, it becomes quite a numbers game. And you think, like, oh, yeah, well, the planet's in trouble. We got to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
When we're talking about East Buffalo, you know, this is about cleaning up the air. When you look at the maps that were created around Humboldt Expressway and the Kensington, you've got lower healthy birth rates. Mm-hmm. You've got
higher asthma,
heart disease, these lower lifespans of people who are living there, who are dying sooner than people who live in other neighborhoods. So you got to think beyond, we've got a goal in the sky there, and we've got real people, our neighbors, who are suffering over this project. And if you put this cap on it, you will actually, by the DOT's own admission, make air quality worse at both ends. So $1 billion to do that. And when we're talking about how are we going to get people out of driving alone in their cars everywhere, what could $1 billion do to bring people in from the suburbs on a train to get them to downtown to work? What could it do to increase metro coverage throughout our city's neighborhoods to give people that access to work? $1 billion could go a lot further than just a cap on an expressway that makes air quality worse.
Especially when you say that the purpose of this cap is to reconnect communities. So if you want to tell me that the purpose of why we're doing this and investing this money is to bring the community back together because we're identifying we made a mistake, there are so many other feasible, safer, equitable ways that we can utilize these resources to help our neighbors in our city.
It really comes down to the question of, like, what are we measuring and how are we measuring it?
There we go.
You know, many communities have changed the process. So two states, Colorado and California, are the only states that have gotten rid of vehicle level of service, which is their subjective measure of how much congestion we're willing to tolerate at a given intersection during peak travel time, to vehicle miles traveled, because we know by reducing vehicle miles traveled, the total number of miles that we are moving in our cars, we are going to have so many better health outcomes in our community. And so if we can, you know, and the challenge with level of service is a car with one person by themselves counts the same as a bus with 50 people in it. It's about how many vehicles we're moving, not how many people we're moving, you know? And so if we can change the metric from, you know, reducing vehicle miles traveled, you know, we're going to have, you know, we're going to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and better environmental outcomes. We're going to improve community health. We're going to improve economic vibrancy without negatively impacting anyone's lives. It's just a matter of how we change the processes in which we are currently using these resources. And sometimes we don't look at the full extent of what the cost of some of these things are. The data is a little bit old, but back in 2011, the state comptroller came out with a report about the cost of physical or childhood obesity in New York State, you know, which is a cause of both this lack of activity and lack of options for recreation and poor nutrition. And they said that the cost, it's at 2011, it was costing New York State $327 million annually. That is not being equated into, are we designing our streets for safe bike paths so kids can ride the bike to the park, right? And so if we want to think about some of these things long-term, we need to include not just how many cars we're moving through our community, but how these decisions and these large infrastructure choices are having a much broader impact on our communities at large.
And on the vehicle miles travel tip, that is something that we see happening in our state legislature currently. Assemblywoman Karen McMahon from Amherst District is sponsoring a bill that is heading into committee, hopefully, in this next legislative session surrounded around that. I want to give thanks to Go Bike because they consulted on that from the very beginning to where now that we're looking to, you know, implement that and put that into action, it gives us the opportunity to inform our community on what that stuff is. And just so you guys know, on Wednesday, October 2nd, we're having an action. It's during the Week Without Driving surrounding this legislation where CEJ will be at the University train station with Assemblywoman Karen McMahon and some other elected officials to inform the community on what VMT and the reduction of VMT looks like and how it can impact our community.
Hey, educators. You've been asking for it, and it's here. Reading Rainbow Stories is ready to help your students stay on track. Each story is paired with activities to help students strengthen cross-curricular skills such as math and business in Lemonade for Sale.
Let's keep track of our sales.
Science and health in Germs Make Me Sick.
Usually, you feel better after a day or two.
Thanks.
But if you don't, you should see a doctor.
And history in Following the Drinking Gourd.
One of the worst things about slavery is that families were separated. Fathers, mothers, and children were oftentimes sold to different people.
Check out the new Reading Rainbow Stories collection on PBS Learning Media today to help your students stay on track. Public media is more than Morning Edition and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Buffalo Toronto Public Media creates digital series to ignite curiosity in young learners, free lesson plans, videos, and training for teachers and parents, and events to empower the minds of our community's next generation. This is Public Media.
Take a levity break with Group Chat, hosted by Tiffany Bentley. Listen Fridays at 10 a.m. on WBFO for lively banter on everything in pop culture, music, movies, trends, social media, and more.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
We've got a few more minutes left. I wanted to just circle back on some recent wins. Justin, you got some good news this morning.
Yeah, so part of our clean mobility project, which is also, which is funded through NYSERDA and has also been an effort that's been funded through the Wilson Foundation, we've been working with the community in East Buffalo to develop a feasibility study for trails that would connect the William Gator Parkway to existing, North Buffalo Tonawanda trails that begin at the South Metro Station, moves all the way down to Bailey. And then, of course, where the Skagitwater Creek is buried, there exists a linear parkway, a park there that has not been maintained in many, many years. So in collaboration with the city as well, and the community, we've advanced this feasibility study. We've got the green light from the city to proceed and to release that study just this morning. We have secured over $7 million to now bring these corridors to a reality based on the vision that the community has expressed. So this is a $7 million investment that's happening in East Buffalo, which is going to be really exciting about bringing healthy, active mobility to the community that has been asking for this for a long time.
Yeah, how long? Because I remember hearing about this project years and years ago. Take us through that process, if you can.
I mean, this, the Wilson Foundation really approached us back in like 2020, 2021 about, some of these corridors that were, being considered, some of the work that we had done previously on the Bicycle Master Plan, and work that other community groups had done. So we, brought on an expert from Verity Engineering. She has expertise on developing the Empire State Trail. We hired people from the community to be our stakeholders throughout that process to talk to us about what is happening in their communities and what they would like to see to happen on this corridor. We didn't just go to them and say, tell us what you think, but we wanted to make sure that their input and their expertise was paid for and a big part of this process. We work with Heart of the City neighborhoods to create an equitable development plan, a part of this project, to make sure that when we make this investments in public infrastructure, we know that it's going to increase surrounding property values. And how do we make sure that that doesn't lead to displacement in those communities just because we've improved the quality of life there? And so this has been a real collaborative effort. The City of Buffalo deserves credit, the Wilson Foundation, the community that has been engaged throughout this process. It has been a real, community-driven process that has allowed us to now, secure $7 million to bring this to fruition. There's still a process to go. The feasibility study has been green-lighted. The next step now is getting it to full engineering and design and under construction, which we hope will be happening within the next, 12 to 18 months. So more certainly to come on that.
I think you mentioned you've been hearing about this for years. And when I started at GoBike, I jumped right into that project and we started engaging the community and hoping for survey responses. And people said, didn't we just fill one of these out? Because UBRI had been in the area and asking them too. And at the time we're saying, this is going to be different. This one we're really going to move forward on. And I want to underline what a big deal this morning's news was, that we are moving past feasibility study and going towards design. I think that's really exciting. And at GoBike, we're working on so many projects at once, and each one sort of inches forward. Again, we're pushing for that urgency so that they move forward by feet and yards, not inches. But this is a moment where our team and the communities that we're working in can really celebrate that something is tangibly going to happen, and there's a map forward for it.
Circling back, we just want to talk about, overarching themes and solutions of what we've talked about today. Just so whoever is listening and jumped in maybe midway through gets a good idea, because we've talked about a lot of things, but I just want to give those listeners a good idea of what we've been talking about.
Yeah, I'll start with, unfortunately, this has been a very violent summer on our roadways, not just in Buffalo, in our suburbs, out in outlying areas, you know, as far as Gowanda as well, where a 13-year-old was left to die. Fortunately, he did not, on the side of the road. We've tried for 100 years to get drivers to behave better. There are constantly rounds trying this. And now that we are in the middle of a 41-year high in pedestrian deaths, while other nations around the world are seeing those death rates plummet, ours continue to climb, the era of asking drivers to behave better is over. We know what works, and that is better designed streets, roads, and intersections. And it's time to move forward with haste with making that happen. And it's time to move forward with haste on getting people out of their cars and onto transit and onto bikes and on their feet. Justin mentioned a stat about the country, but in Erie County, we know that 30% of all car trips are 1 mile or less. So given everything we know about the pollution in our city and region and everything we know about what our planet is going through, and you ask yourself, like, do I need to make this trip by car, or could I get out there and walk or bike? And if you could do that once a week, say, I'm going to walk or bike, or this one I'm going to catch the bus or catch the train, what a difference that would make if people made those changes. And I think what I want to leave people with is, like, take pride in being a Buffalonian. Take pride in being a Western New Yorker. And that comes down to not just, you know, shoveling your sidewalk so that your neighbors can get across it safely. Say that but again. It also means recognizing that the people you see walking across the street and riding on the shoulder are your neighbors. If you don't know them, they might be a friend of your friend. So realizing that slowing down when you're driving and giving that cyclist or that pedestrian some space, some time, is really going to be a difference of 10 to 15 seconds in your day. And then everyone gets where they're going safely. When you see these efforts from GoBike, from CEJ, to increase safety, increase accessibility, this also affects drivers. A road that is safe for a child or an older adult to use in any means is safer for a driver too. Mm-hmm. So join us in these efforts to overhaul our city and region. If we want to claim that we're going to be a climate refuge city, you know, we can't just assume, well, we've got low traffic, maybe that traffic will go up. No, we need to be ready with readily accessible metro, whether bus or rail, with safe places to walk and bike, with safe streets outside our children's homes. And then we can absorb the people who may be coming here in the future if indeed climate refuges are needed.
And just as a quick aside, you know, we know what a Buffalo looks like that has great transportation.
That's right.
Because it's happened here before.
That's right.
We can just go back 100 years. That's We've right. seen the pictures.
And Jamal. just and for those, like Kevin had said, you know, just for that 1 week, there's a week at the end of September that goes from September 30th to October 5th, that Friday, is a week without driving. It's a national campaign where we're encouraging everybody just, you know, find a cleaner, you know, mobile way of getting to work. And if you can just join us, and that you could take a picture of yourself, hashtag, you know, week without driving, CEJR, you know, all of our, you know, social media will be a part of that. And thanks again to Assemblywoman Karen McMahon and her willingness to join us on that, because it's very important. We not just, you know, provide opportunities, but we're also showing that this is something that can be done. So to do it in real life would be helpful.
And I think just to support what Jamal said, you know, so many people ask us, well, how do I do this? Mm. I've never done it before. I've never ridden my bike to work. I've never taken the train before. Under our Go Bikes umbrella, we house the Go Buffalo Niagara program, where we provide services, whether it's to individuals, employers, employees, property owners, you know, everything from Give Transit a Try programs, you know, a bike Sherpa. Someone will ride their bike with you to work to show you actually how to do it and give you the resources so you are educated to properly do it. We have a guaranteed ride home. So if you are a regular cyclist or transit user and there's an emergency at home, we'll cover your Uber or Lyft to get you back to where you need to be. We can match you up with carpooling. So if there's someone else in your office or in your neighborhood that's going to the same location, there are a number of different strategies and programs that we have available to offer through our Go Buffalo Niagara program that can support people in these decisions to change their travel behaviors, to be more sustainable, to be healthier, you know, and to lead to a better city. So, you know, please take advantage of these services that we have available to offer.
And just real quick, talk about all the things that you can find on the Go Bike website, because there's stats, there's things like Justin, you said, to help you just get around our region. What are to you, Kevin, what are some of the more important things you will find on the Go Bike website?
Sure. So I've been trying to take notes on everything we talked about today because so much of it is very visual.
Right.
From crash maps to how to redesign roads. And I'll put up a blog right at the top of our news section that'll say what we talked about with CEJ on What's Next with Thomas. So you'll see everything we talked about today. But what we also keep on there is a high injury crash map divided by the council districts of our city. And you'll also see the projects we're doing in municipalities across Western New York and the process that we go through in community engagement, in measurement of how many cars and trucks are moving by, at what speed, how many walkers, bikers are using these before and after. You'll see the reports after we do feasibility studies. Everything that we're doing, we make public after we hand it over to the municipality that worked with us. So really encourage people to explore that site, follow our social media to stay up to date on, you know, unfortunately, if there's more violence, what is our response? What are actionable outcomes that these towns that the violence is happening in can take, and what you can demand of your elected leadership, whether it's a quick solution or something more long term? You'll see that on our social media. You'll see it on our website, gobikebuffalo.org.
And I don't want to, I just underscore, you know, if you want to get out there biking more, we have a full service bike shop, new bikes, used bikes. We have classes to teach you how to fix it yourself. Everything from if you want to ride during the winter, to, you know, the different gear that you may need to ride during the winter. So, you know, please also take advantage of all the educational opportunities that we have out there to get people out there riding on two wheels.
You're listening to What's Next. I want to thank our guests, Justin Booth, Kevin Heffernan, and Jamal Davis from the Coalition of Economic Justice. Obviously, Justin Booth and Kevin Heffernan are from Go Bike. This is WBFO News in Buffalo, Toronto Public Media.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.